Hello and welcome to the Paranormal or What podcast with me, your host, Michaela Ford. Join me for tales of the paranormal, cryptids, UFOs, spooks, spectres and ghosts. We'll have interviews, stories, theories and musings, and maybe just a sprinkling of spine-tingling terror. Don't forget to please email me your experiences at paranormalorwhatpodcast@outlook.com. Or you can record your story straight onto the Anchor platform at anchor.fm/paranormalorwhatpodcast/message. The reason I'm doing the podcast is to get to know like-minded people. People like you. Because together, we can figure it out.
Fearscape Media Network. Exploring the unknown, one podcast at a time.
Fearscape Media Network is your new home for everything weird and enlightening. Check out podcasts and YouTube shows covering content from discussions on horror films to the paranormal to meditation. Find out more at fearscapemedia.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another fantastic episode of The Convergence Enigma with Josh and Stefan. I am your host, Stefan Gearhart, and I am joined, as always, by the man with no wings, but wishes he had wings, my co-host, Mr. Josh Rutledge. What's up, sir?
You know, I believe I can fly.
Well, only if I clap hard enough.
I believe I can touch the sky.
I believe in apple pie.
I think about it
every night and day. You can't sing R. Kelly anymore. It's against the law.
It's not, you know, it's not allowed.
It makes you yellow.
Oh.
Think about that one, folks. Yeah, really. Anyways, okay. We've got a fun show tonight, Josh. We are talking about a really neat subject, something that you have had a growing interest in. I've always had an interest in, but didn't realize to think about the rest of the place. So tonight we're going to be talking about fae or fairy from around the world. You know, we think a lot when we think immediately fairy, we think of Europe, right? Just generalized Europe is what we think of. Yep. But there's a lot more from around the world. What about fae in Native American culture? What about the fae in Japan? You know, things like that. So we're going to be covering that, and I am super, super excited about that. And just a reminder, make sure you guys are checking out the UnX Network, because we are on the X, baby!
The X.
We are on the X, okay? This is the new mainstream here, okay? So go to UnX, UnXNetwork.com. Check out the UnX.
Anybody thinks anything, we're not taking ecstasy. That's not what we mean by on the X. Okay.
No. Although, God, you look beautiful, Josh. No, we are not on the X, but we are on the X, capital X. And before your grandmothers get angry, it's not triple X either. It's just one X. It's okay.
Just one. They couldn't afford the other two.
It's not even liquor. All right. Hardly even know her. But anyways, we are on that. We are also on the Fearscape Media Network. You guys can go to fearscapemedia.com and check out all the other podcasts that are a part of that. And if you want to check out our archived episodes, make sure you guys go to theconvergenceenigma.com. fearscape.com. There you can check out all of our old episodes, as well as from when we were Fearscape Paranormal. Is good stuff.
All good stuff.
That's my Obama. Obama. Obama's on X. hey, Michelle. So you got some head and shoulders there. Okay.
So, no, go ahead and stop. Go ahead and
yeah,
stop.
We're going to go ahead and stop. Anyways, we're moving on. We are going to get to our first segment of the eve, which is Psychic Word of the Week.
And now, the Psychic Word of the Week.
Psychic Word of the Week comes from the Encyclopedic Psychic Dictionary. June G. Bletzer, PhD, rest in peace, honey bear. Sometimes I feel like the call guy from The Price is Right when I do this. So, because somebody's like, the Encyclopedic Psychic Dictionary from June G. Bletzer, PhD, retail price of $9.99
1987.
Anyways, Josh, I flipped through the pages. We stopped. And oddly enough, talking about the Fae, the complete opposite is what I landed on, which is the mundane world.
The mundane world.
Yeah. So esoteric here. There's two definitions. The first definition says a perception of three-dimensional objects, things, earth, men, etc., anything that is visible. Two, the manifestation of the total past vibrations that can be perceived by the five senses and energy held together by the mind. Oh, there's a third one. This comes from Patrick Flanagan. A pattern of energy interferences, an illusion of solidarity and stillness in a web of emotional energy fields. Ooh, since it's Patrick Flanagan, I'm going to read that again, but with an Irish accent. Hi, thank you. My name is Patrick Flanagan. I'm here today to talk about the mundane world. I believe that the mundane world is a pattern of energy interferences, an illusion of solidarity and stillness in a web of emotional energy fields. Amen.
There Faith you go.
Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. All right.
So you forgot your hat.
No, I don't always wear a hat. Not on Wednesdays.
Yeah, so
I love when you're just like pause.
I'm so distracted now by the accent that I totally forgot what you just read.
Hey, Josh, what you be doing? Oh, you should hear JD doing. Oh man, what you be doing? I'm gonna do this. I'm Irish. No, Jersey Devil, you just sound like yourself drunk. So, anyways, that
Jersey
is
Devil's in a new band.
Do what?
Jersey Devil's in a new band, the Bangers and Mash.
Oh, the don't even get him started. don't even get him started. He's got cryptids all over the place, dude. He's in bands, theater troupes. He's in like ice cream socials. He's in everything, dude.
Used car salesman.
He's in it all. Krampus gave him a big head. Becoming Krampus. Anywho, so that's the mundane world. Is basically what we see. And so it makes you wonder, when we do see something, are we seeing it in the mundane, or are we catching a glimpse in the etheric or esoteric?
I don't know. I do not know. Here's the thing. If your vision is so that you can see the non-mundane, would you know the difference?
Well, I don't want to sit and stew on that very long. Speaking of stew, we've got Astral Stew is available out on podcast now. You can check that out at fearscapemedia.com or just on our YouTube page or Spotify or wherever. Just look up Astral Stew. We the only one. But we should have a new episode of that dropping here whenever this month. It's already here, probably.
It's already here when this comes out.
See, when I don't handle it, I just don't know. I just don't know. Anyways, moving on, Josh. I want to get to our UAP sighting of the week. UAP sighting of the week. Retail brought price to,
brought to you by Kraft.
Brought to you by Kraft with a C.
Yeah, so this actually, I found this on MUFON. And it happened in Woodstock, Illinois back in 1998.
Hey, what is a sassy girl tell an alien? when she doesn't want him there.
I don't know.
She says, girl, Mufon.
No.
You're welcome.
No.
So what do we got, Josh? Where do we got? Where's it come from?
So, yeah, it happened in Woodstock, Illinois, in 1998.
At approximately June 23rd, 1998, I was driving northwestbound on Country Club Road in unincorporated McHenry County. At that time in life, I was working as a banker, although I had served as an armed military policeman from 1983 to 1986. In the 2000, I was working for McHenry County as a deputy sheriff. Just before reaching McConnell Road, I looked out my window to my left and I saw a strange, triangular object moving slowly towards me from the west. I was able to determine the shape due to the prominent bright lights on the bottom of each corner. I continued to observe the object as I proceeded home. Because I was in a heavily wooded area, I could not observe it continuously. Just as I turned northbound onto Fleming Road, I saw that I had a fairly unobstructed view of the approaching object. I pulled onto the shoulder and exited my vehicle. I believe that one or two other vehicles pulled over in the vicinity as well, and the occupants exited, although oddly, there was no excited conversation between anyone, as might be expected. Everyone seemed singularly focused on the approaching object. As the object came closer, it did not change course or elevation whatsoever. It made no sound. It was traveling at roughly the speed of a dirigible or hot air balloon. It was very difficult to judge mass at first because the sky was mostly black, and so there was nothing to compare scale. As it began to pass by me, though, I observed row upon row of lights, such as you might see in a skyscraper at night. And then I got the sense that the object was enormous and could possibly house the equivalent of a small city. Also, at the front of the object, I observed at least two larger bright lights, and I got the sense that it must be some sort of cockpit or control room. The object was close enough to observe its lights clearly, but not so close that I could observe any sort of activity from within. The object passed by within a couple of minutes, continuing eastbound in the general direction of McHenry City. I got in my vehicle and continued home again without having any interaction with any of the other witnesses, which seems odd in retrospect. I considered myself fortunate to have witnessed the event, though I do not recall telling anyone about it, thinking they would think I had made up the story or I was mentally unbalanced. Some months later, I did tell my older brother about the experience, though he is the only one to the best of my recollection. What is very odd to me is that although the experience was very real at the time, in the weeks and months that followed, my mind began trying to convince me that I must have dreamed it all. I also found that my memory of the incident seemed to want to fade, and I had to have sort of a battle within my mind to keep the memory intact. It almost seems like the object or its occupants had performed some sort of a Jedi mind trick to erase my memory of the incident from any witnesses. I don't know if the incident was reported by any local news media, although I wasn't looking for it either. To date, I have not had any other UFO sightings or experiences.
Woo. Man. That's intense. That's intense. You know, it reminds me of that listener story that we got from that woman who, if she hadn't had things recorded on her phone, she wouldn't even have known something happened. And then her fake dad or whatever,
right,
like,
showed up and deleted everything. Yeah. Well, and this also reminds me of the triangle craft that I saw like about back last fall. And so, you know, what really strikes me about this, my experience, my encounter, and this person's encounter is that it doesn't meet any of Lou Elizondo's five observables, and so it's immediately kind of tossed out by anybody who is a diehard Lou Elizondo is right fan. So,
well, to be fair, it was 1998. He didn't have the five. Maybe he did, but he didn't know he was supposed to list them because he's not a time traveler. Speaking of which, I'm going to do a quick creepy catch up here, Josh. Just a quick one. Okay. Right. Last week, man, I was driving home from the Renaissance Festival in Arizona out in Gold Canyon. And I was driving out, man. It was sunset. beautiful fiery red sunset because it was cloudy, which is, you know, the best sunsets. And I see four incredible lights just hanging in the sky, man. And as I'm turning, because I'm coming from the Superstition Highway from the out by your new house, and I'm driving out and I'm doing all this stuff, and the lights are just hanging there. One goes away because it's flashing. It's the only one flashing, and it flies away. And it was like flying in and out of everything. And I realized it was a helicopter. Well, the other three lights are just hanging there. It's not stars because there's clouds there. I can't see it. They're not planes because I saw this for a solid 10, 15 minutes or so. And as I'm moving, they're moving too. So it changes the pattern that I'm seeing. So it wasn't like one giant craft, but there were three lights, man, that I saw for quite some time. And the only reason it ended after 10 minutes is because I hit a section of the highway where I just, the mountain covered it. So, but yeah, I checked flight radar, nothing. No, I did see the helicopter that was on there, but that was it. So,
interesting.
Yep. Anyways, let's go ahead, Josh, and let's get moving on to Faye around the world.
Yeah, Faye around the world.
Faye
around
the world. I would listen to that song.
you talked about you've had a long time interest in it, but my interest has recently peaked. You know, I've had interest in Fays and fairies for a while, but really since we started talking about Hollow Earth.
Oh yeah.
There's a lot of consistency between like a lot of Fae story and Fae lore and Hollow Earth. So really has sparked me looking into it more.
Well, that fits the convergence enigma, Josh.
It does.
So
it does.
Thank you for tuning in, people, because this is what you've been waiting for.
Right.
How does it all turn in? Tune
so
in.
I'm going to take just a couple of minutes and talk about a couple of, let's say, housekeeping things when it comes to the Fae, for just anybody who maybe not know what Fae is. Okay. So Fae folk, also known as fair folk or good folk, are present in many areas. We're going to talk on some of them tonight. Just for the ones that I collected, I have 13 pages worth of stuff. We probably won't even get through it all tonight. So there's a lot more out there.
So Faye, halfway around the world.
Yeah. Well, no, we hit around the world. But you know, you probably picture like Tinkerbell, right? When you think about Faye or fairies. But really, Faye in its entirety is, it includes everything from leprechauns to elves to gnomes. To, like all of those things are included in the Faye folk.
I think that there's a leprechaun and a banshee that's in JD's band Bangers and Mash.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, no, Banshee's, no surprise, but the banshee's the singer.
The lead singer, I would assume. And JD probably plays the drums because he's got his wings. He can
really yes.
Anyways, so they're actually broken up into two different courts. You have the Selly and the Unselly. And so I'm probably saying that wrong. Selly, maybe. Silly, but when the Silly refers to a group of fairies who are lovely, cheerful, friendly, and helpful, and they are typically willing to help and most likely honorable. Whereas the Unsilly is, as you would imagine, who are hostile to humankind, wicked in temperament. The Unsilly are thought to enjoy torturing and harming mortals.
The Greys.
Are easily offended and should be avoided. Almost like a Taro and Darrow situation here. I'm going to
Or a Santosh and Stefan situation.
Yeah. It is also worth mentioning that neither court is really considered good or evil. It's just, that's really an oversimplification of it. It's just, I guess, intent really more than anything. So, if you are ever out in the woods or anywhere in an open space and you see a ring of mushrooms, that's often considered to be a sign that fairies or fae are nearby.
Run.
It strongly recommends that you do not sit or meditate in the middle of a ring of mushrooms.
And I know we got listeners out there that like to just do evil or weird occulty things for the sake of doing weird occulty evil things, but if you're listening to this show, that means that you believe in some of this stuff. Okay, so what Josh is telling you here is legit. Okay, I'm not even trying to be funny right now. Okay, is seriously, like, don't do this stuff. Don't mess with stuff that you don't need to mess with, because, man, it can affect more than just you.
Yeah.
PSA over.
So, I mean, it for what I found multiple articles and various things that were talking about it in lore. If you enter a fairy ring without permission, then you take on a risk of dancing with the fae until you go insane or die of exertion.
Yeah, and you know, there are people that think that that mysterious dancing sickness that happened in the 16 or 1700s or whatever it was to that city, that this is why. Like, so many people died. They just danced themselves to death. That's a real, real event. Yeah.
But, you know, also just if you do come across a mushroom circle, mushroom ring, you can sit next to it and meditate or whatever, you know, build a close connection with the fae. Words with the fae are very impactful. It mean, like, we toss words around all the time, right? But for the fae, they have a significant meaning. Like, a fae will likely only tell you their name if they fully trust you. If you ask a fae its name, it won't tell you, hence the kind of riddle of, like, Rumpelstiltskin, you know, the story of Rumpelstiltskin. Don't say, if you ever are working with fae, don't say things like thank you or you're welcome, because it implies that there's still something that you could do for them. So use different words. So bottom line, just be careful what you say if you're working with a fae. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
No, right. Seriously though, like, Santosh will tell you, one of his favorite dreams of mine, and I'm a little hazy on it these days, but I had a dream. I was working with the fae. This is not the dream part. I was working with the fae in my magic practices. And so that night I had a dream that I was looking for answers for something. I don't remember if it was about love or whatever it was, but I asked the fae for help. And so when I went to sleep, that happened in my dream. The fae showed up and jumped into a pair of shoes and turned into a flying shoe. And I was like, okay, I don't understand this. What do you want me to do here? This doesn't, whatever it was, it didn't have anything to do in my mind with what I thought. I said, could you please speak to me in your own language, please, so that I can understand? And then all of a sudden, this, like, flock of shoe fairies showed up, and the main shoe was like, shoe, 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 shoe. And they go, shoe. And I was like, man, like, you have to be exact with the fae, like, because they will give you what you want. And I asked it for its language, and it happened to be speaking shoe at that moment. And that's what I got. And I woke right up afterwards. I never did find out what it meant.
So anyways, be careful if you're working with the fae. If you encounter the fae, just be careful. So
yeah, they follow their own set of laws. They do not follow human laws.
Right. So getting into the kind of different types of fae around the world. So, you know, you mentioned that when you primarily think about it, you think about European, you know, which is I have included the UK and into that European bucket. But, you know, so you've got, starting at the top of the list, we've got a banshee. So a solitary fae represents an omen of death. These types of fae are often referred to as woman of the fairies, and would wail, scream, or cry outside the home of someone who was about to die. It is thought that only households of pure Irish ancestry could be warned by banshees.
And let me say this as well. We are very aware that some of these entities are also not considered fae. That they fit into some of these categories. And I know some of you are going, no, banshees are just female spirits. Some of them that have died that, you know, are blah, blah, blah. Sure. Okay. Right now we're focused on one aspect of the lore, which is the fairy lore.
Yeah. I mean, it does say that later legends transformed the banshee into a kind of wraith or ghost that frequently connected it to a specific household. So basically the meaning of banshee transformed over time, which is common with a lot of different lore.
Yeah, I mean, the original word banshee was woman of the fairy mound, right? So
Next up, we have a Bogart.
Oh, the Bogart, Boggarts, Booger, Boogers. Yeah. What? There's so many different names. We covered this in our Boogeyman episode.
Yeah, we did. I think we also talked about it in Shapeshifters when we covered that episode two and a half years ago.
Already, I'm transported back to Harry Potter, dude, when they were fighting that Boggart. Bogey.
So, yeah, it's a shape-shifting creature from English folklore, inhabits both moors and marshes, and is sometimes called a Bogard or a bag.
Bogart the bag, man.
Some legends say that Bogarts haunt the swamps of northern England, Scotland, and Wales. In many Scottish and northern English folklore, there are numerous household Bogarts who act similar to a brownie by doing household chores. However, Bogarts tend to be more malevolent by destroying household items if not rewarded or mistreated, whereas brownies tend to be more friendly.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because a lot of the British Isles fae tend to be chaotic, so to speak, right? Yeah. But when you get into places like Norway and Germany and things like that, they're workers. They're more, because you get into the gnomes and things like that, they're more the workers, you know, they're the working class guys. We're all those hoity-toity fae over in the UK. They just do whatever they want and they drink spirits all day.
So, you know, you mentioned that the Bogart from Harry Potter, but I also found that the Pennywise is also considered a Bogart.
Yep, even though he's an alien, but
So we heard there mentioned the brownie when we were talking about Bogart. So brownie is in English and Scottish mythology. These types of fae are often known as the household fae, being short and small with big eyes and pointy ears. Brownies are hardworking and believed to live in homes or barns. They seldom seen, but are frequently heard scrubbing, cooking, and doing household chores late at night.
You know what they're not known for doing?
What's that?
Winning Super Bowls. That's what the Cleveland Browns are named after. They used to be the Cleveland Brownies.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The old logo was a brownie. Like, they're named after the Brownies. And it just got shortened to the Browns.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yep.
Well, there you go.
True story. Cleveland Brownies, y'all. Look it up.
It does say here, though, that brownies don't work for free. They expect to be rewarded with food, drink. And if you don't reward them, then you'll find all your stuff smashed.
So. Yep. Or if they're like, you know, fixing your shoes or whatever, they'll flip the nails upside down.
Yep. Or, you know, they'll release livestock and let them roam free. It says here, don't present a brownie with an offering of clothes, because this would be seen as a great insult to them and they'd most likely leave your home forever.
Oh, man, boy, that's starting to sound like
Dobby.
Dobby, yeah, but you give him a sock, it's go time.
Well, interesting in it, because the house elves of Dobby, Creature, and Winky are all based on brownie fae.
There you go.
Next up on the list, we have changelings. Stories of changelings been passed down for centuries. Again, we talked about some of these both in our Native American episode, also changeling episode. A changeling could be identified by a few characteristics, including being old, ugly, and having minimal growth or advanced and intelligent for its age. Parents and family members were frequently blamed for fae kidnappings. A newborn that received too much adoration or praise might garner unwanted awareness from the fae, who desired attractive and charming babies. Fear of changeling fae abductions was prevalent throughout European folklore, but similar beliefs have been found in multiple cultures. The next little bit might be a trigger warning here. Gonna throw up a little alert. But there are changeling stories that exist due to the rise of Christianity and the belief that infants are vulnerable to demonic possession. So there was a continuous dread of fae kidnappings, and they used to do things like put a baby in a shovel and hold the shovel over a fire to see if it would change. They were sometimes blasted with iron nails or forced to spend the day on a hillside or a manure mound to see if they would change.
Ugh, man. Yeah, witches and changelings, man. You just...
That's rough.
It says here on a happier message, a mother was occasionally told that being kind towards a changeling will lead to the recovery of her own child, which did happen in each instance.
Wow.
Next up on the list, we got the dryads. These are wood nymphs and tree spirits who live in trees. Their names come from the Greek word of dryas, meaning oak.
Not to be confused with the triad, which is Japanese gangs.
And according to Jackie Chan movies, you don't want to cross them.
No, you don't.
So the dryads are known for fiercely guarding trees, and you'll often find them chatting to the trees they protect. These types of fae believe it's their duty to punish anyone who commits crimes against nature, and their wrath is not something you want to encounter. It's often said that if the tree the dryad is protecting dies, so would the dryad.
I mean, think about it, though. You think about, you know, the wood elves, right, from Lord of the Rings, and they were the ones you didn't want to mess with.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Next up, we have a Dullahan. It's an Irish Dullahan, sometimes spelled Dullahan. So... or what was the Scotty off of Star Trek?
That's what I was just trying to think. James
is like Doolin.
Doohan.
Yeah. How can I consider
myself? Hand.
Yep. Terrifying, wild male or female headless rider galloping through the dark, spreading dread, suffering, and catastrophe to the homes, countrysides, towns, or anyone watering roads late at night. The Dullahan is sometimes associated with demons, ghosts, or fae. It often carries its severed head, which is empowered with magical abilities, allowing it to see for miles. Sometimes its horse is headless, too.
Yeah. So many folk tales already pop into my head. No pun intended.
So, you know, you may recognize the inspiration for the Headless Horseman, mm-hmm. right? In the legend of Sleepy Hollow. However, a Dullahan is different from the Headless Horseman in a few ways. To start, a Dullahan may whip your eyes out, but it never kills anyone.
Oh!
Encountering a Dullahan is terrible warning, and crossing paths with one isn't a positive omen. Most likely you or someone you care about will suffer a tragic death. So, next time you see a headless person riding a headless horse... just run. Walk back inside wherever you are.
You're like, you know what? Maybe I will watch 60 Minutes tonight.
Yeah. next up, we have the elves. So the elves are nature spirits who appear in various folklore mythology around the world.
And then the elves have 500 subcategories.
Oh, yeah. I'm not even going to get into that. So, but they do most commonly associated with early Germanic tribes, Britain and Iceland, as well as in Teutonic and Norse mythology.
Yep.
Initially, the term elf included all varieties of fae in Anglo-Saxon, but it eventually came to represent a specific type of fae. Over time, many cultures accepted the shift in meaning as well. Elves are human-like fae who changed their appearance freely. I'm going to butcher this name because it's like
what you Gaelic. Do.
Gin Canach.
God bless you.
Thank you. Is a type of fae in Irish mythology known for smoking a clay pipe.
So Gandalf.
Yeah. Literally translates to love talker and refers to fairies known for their ability to be alluring or enchanting with their voices.
That's weird. That was my nickname in high school.
Gin Canach or love talker?
Love talker.
Okay.
We didn't get into the Gaelic there.
You'll recognize a Gin Canach fairy by his lack of shadow, a mist that swirls around him, and the birds will stop singing. Legend states that any woman who is unlucky enough to kiss a Gin Canach fairy was doomed because he would vanish as fast as he had appeared, leaving them to die of desire.
Jeez. You're all doomed.
Let's see. Gnomes are up next. Gnomes are earth spirits who live beneath the ground. These type
can
of.
Can we take a minute and just remember David the Gnome? It was a great cartoon. It's a great cartoon.
Not sure I remember David.
You don't remember David the Gnome and Swift the Fox? Man, sometimes I wish Santosh was my co-host.
Well, you know, you have to remember that I grew up without cable.
This is true. This is true. David the Gnome. And you'll see pictures. I know you'll recognize it, though. But David the Gnome was voiced by the dad from Happy Days and also known as Father Dowling of the Mysteries.
Okay.
Anyways, David the Gnome. Love that.
So these types of fae resemble dwarfs and are often seen wearing clothes similar to a monk's habit. They fiercely protect all types of treasures, quarries, and mines. Kobolds, sometimes called kobolds or kobolts, originate from Germanic folklore and act similarly to the English brownie. Kobolds are small household spirits who are known to be quite mischievous if forgotten or mistreated. Some stories even claim that they will wickedly kick someone from behind who bent down to pick something up. I think we knew someone that was a kobold in high school.
I was about to say.
Yep. This next one I thought interesting. Lady of the Lake.
Oh, she's considered a... Well, I guess so. I mean, pretty much anything in the whole Avalon and stuff like that is...
And there's actually tales of ladies of the lake in different cultures within European. So it's not just an Arthurian legend type.
Yeah, I guess
thing.
I just always kind of looked at her as more of a goddess type than a fae type, but makes sense. Now we're getting into some Welsh stuff for sure.
Yeah. The Lady of the Lake is a magical water fairy and enchantress who lives in lakes and ponds to keep watch over them and maintain their purity. In Arthurian legend, of course, she's the one who, you know, brings Arthur's injured body to Avalon. She also provides the sword known as Excalibur. Some people believe a Lady of the Lake is a representation of the Morrigan. Others believe she's the Celtic goddess. I'm probably going to get this wrong. Aine, A with a little asterisk, I-N-E, or Coventina.
Coventina.
It's also been speculated that they descended from a mermaid.
A merman, Dad. Merman. Believe it. I was gonna say, because that's where I was kind of heading to next, was is she considered a mermaid then? Yeah. And then is a mermaid considered a fairy?
Well, it's in the list. We just haven't got there yet. We're in the L's. Gotta give you some time. So we got the Lenonchi. It means fairy mistress and is a beautiful Irish solitary fae from the other world. The Lenonchi is often portrayed as female, but a few folklores characterizes them as male. Lenonchi often seduce and help people with creative abilities like poets, artists, or musicians. They are gorgeous and fascinating to their lovers, but entirely invisible to their lovers' friends and family. I've got a girlfriend. She lives in Canada, I swear. The Lenonchi inspires their lovers so that they can achieve prestige and success. So, leprechauns. I don't think there's any reason to really talk about leprechauns. Everybody knows what leprechaun is. But it's interesting here. I will call out that they're sometimes called a fairy banker.
Oh, yeah.
So next up is merfolk. So that includes your mermaid, the mermen.
Merman, Dad.
In Irish folklore, they're known as merrows. So mermaids are depicted as half human, half fish. Been around for centuries. These water spirits have been linked to sorrow and destruction in modern and ancient folklore, while they can also be compassionate. They also may lure sailors to doom and death by guiding them to rocks and causing their ships to wreck.
Yeah, that, and then that even gets you close to sirens and stuff.
Mermen are sometimes associated with eating their own children or drowning people underwater out of spite and revenge for fishing in their territory.
Is that why? Is that why Ariel was trying to get away? Because her dad was trying to eat her? Like, let's be honest here.
I don't know. I mean, Sebastian. So, anyways.
Put him in a pot, dude. I'm down, but.
Nymphs Our nature spirits are materialized as gorgeous women and are part Greek and Roman mythology. These types of fae are often called goddesses, and it's believed the word nymph is derived from the Greek word for bride.
Yep.
Nymphomania
comes from.
Overall, nymphs are classified according to the natural element they are connected with and what they protect. Pixies are a type of trooping fairy found in the areas near Devon and Cornwall in England. They have a youthful appearance and often dress in green with a pointed nightcap. However, they can be seen in a variety of outfits.
Yep, your pixie is more closer to Tinkerbell.
Tinkerbell, yeah.
But even then, I mean, that Peter Pan dressed essentially like a pixie.
Right. Well, I mean, I think it's often talked about how Peter Pan really became a pixie by doing...
Yeah. Yeah, he essentially became a human-sized pixie.
Right. Pixies are mischievous and often deals with pranks and trickery. They can easily be identified by their short stature, small pointed ears, pale skin, and their colorful wings that flare like flower petals. Put the peas in there. Next up, we got the Pooka.
Ah, Harvey, he's a Pooka.
Sometimes spelled, it's a P U with an umlaut C A, or sometimes spelled P O O K A. It's a Celtic spirit and a shapeshifter that can take various forms, including horses, rabbits, goats, and humans.
It's a rabbit. His name's Harvey.
It's also known as Puck in English folklore. Mm-hmm. Sometimes believed to use the light of Will of the Wisp to lure people into swamps or dishes and then fleeing with delight.
Yep, I mean, that's Puck from Midsummer Night's Dream. We've covered a lot of those.
Yeah,
but I don't know if you know this or not, but Pokemon come from the word Pooka.
Yeah, interesting.
Yep, that's where Pokemon comes from. Is from
Pokemon.
Mm-hmm.
So it was believed during medieval times that Pooka would whisk away little children if they were to go near to them. Pooka are said to inhabit wild places like remote thickets and glens. A household would leave a plate of food at night for the Pooka outside their house or yard. In return, it would do chores during the night and protect the property from fire and trespassers. If I leave food outside now, all I get is raccoons and opossums. Salamanders are a type of elemental spirit commonly associated with fire. Salamanders were first described by German Swiss physician Paracelsus. It's my best guess. Pericles. And have remained popular in esoteric occultism, literature, and art since then.
Talking about Pericles?
I don't think so. It's Paracelsus. Oh. And it was in 1493.
Oh, I was
thinking that's way Pericles. After Pericles.
Yeah, way. But yeah, it's interesting that salamander always makes this list, you know, because even in pagan, when we call the watchtowers, when we get to fire, you know, you've already called in the sylphs and you've called in the mermaids and you've called in the gnomes of the north, and you get to fire and you invite the salamanders. When I first became pagan, I was like, can we just bring in a gecko? Like, can we bring in a dragon beard? Like, what's up?
Well, I think it's really interesting, and actually slightly off topic a little bit, but the Frozen 2 has a very, I don't know, kind of like pagan feel to it. Like, it's got a salamander. You've got the four main elements, then you got the fifth element of spirit, things like that. Just so. Next up is the Selkie. Originating from Orkney and the United Kingdom folklore, the Selkie is a gentle water spirit believed to live in the sea as a seal, but once on land, they fully assume human form. I wonder if that's considered a were.
I don't know. We talked about this when we did Native American folklore. It's like some of these like cross, and so I don't know. It's tricky. It's tricky.
Yeah. It says here that according to some legends, obviously you'll understand, the Selkie are fallen angels who were too pure to be condemned to hell, and instead fell to the shoreline of Earth. They're often described as beautiful and doe-eyed.
One of the best, if you guys want to watch something that's about a Selkie, watch Song of the Sea. It came out in 2014. It's animated, and it's absolutely phenomenal. I think it even won an Oscar for like best animated movie that year. But it's really, really good. So highly recommend it.
Next up, we have Trolls.
We skipping Sylphs? All right, there's too many. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of Trolls, too. I'm only going to talk about
them. Well, Sylph is a fairy of the air. Okay? It's an air spirit. Okay.
There you go. So, Trolls are a type of troll, sometimes called Drows. Generally, all Trolls kidnap humans, but they value young mothers and newborns most of all. Young mothers can breastfeed their children, and Trolls can easily swap a baby with a changeling. Trolls only appear at night because the sunlight turns them to stone. You may imagine a troll to be a giant-like in appearance, and older folklore would agree with you. However, later legend describes trolls as smaller creatures, similar to dwarves.
Yeah, I mean, we always think of the classic Hobbit experience where he tricked them, talking to them all night to get them to turn into stone.
Also, there's a cartoon on Netflix that deals with trolls. It's like Troll Hunter, I think, is what
it
is.
Yeah, Troll Hunter. Yeah.
It was voiced by the guy who played Chekhov in the reboot until he tragically died. Yeah. But a lot of this stuff is, they talk about it in that show. It's a really good show, and it's like three different shows kind of all mixed into one. But anyways, next up is the Tauth de Danann, and it is from Celtic mythology. Which means people of the goddess Danu.
Yep. There is a band called Tuatha Dé. Tuatha Dé Danann. Incredible band. If you've never listened to that band. But they are, of course, named after this.
Yep. They are believed to have magically materialized from a cloud of mist from across the Northern Sea. They were immortal and known for their magical abilities as well as their power, charm, elegance, and cleverness. They were believed to have ruled Ireland 4,000 years ago. They withdrew to the other world.
I've withdrawled before.
Yeah. the other world underground beneath the She Mountains, the She Mounds, when they were invaded and overpowered by the Malaysians. Scholars believe the Malaysians were most likely the first Gaels in Ireland and ancestors of the modern Irish. So another account of, you know, kind of like a different people or beings living, you know, in a place before humans occupied it. So next we have the Undines, sometimes spelled Undine, our water nymph.
They're the other one that you call when you call the watchtowers of the West for water.
Cool. Becomes human when she falls in love with a mortal man. If he is unfaithful, her death is inevitable. Will-o'-the-Wisp, we've seen those. You see those in the movie with Merida.
That's okay, Josh. That's swamp gas.
Yeah, it probably is swamp gas. That's what swamp gas is. The will.
That's what that was Hynek's whole thing, was that what people thought were will-o'-the-wisps were really just swamp gas.
Yeah. Or is all swamp gas just will-o'-the-wisp?
Ooh.
Now I'm going to get to think it. As a type of fey pixie believed to inhabit the marshes and bogs of England, will-o'-wisp are nature spirits that inhabit the elements of the earth. The name will-o'-wisp is derived from the Saxon word wile and means trickery or deceitfulness, combined with the Swedish word wisp, meaning a bundle of tinder. All right, we are now leaving European and United Kingdom, moving on to Norway.
With just about 7 minutes.
Minutes to go. But there's not as many. There's not as many in the rest of the countries. So that's really the big bulk of it. So in Norwegian, they don't call them fey. They call them underjordisk.
Underjordisk. Yeah.
Or those who live beneath the ground. Vetter, part of the same...
Now we're getting into Hollow Earth.
Yeah. part of the same, so Vetter, part of the same meaning, but these are more known to be smaller kind, and Holder folk was a common range for such creatures. Mm-hmm. So you got Rise, which is a shapeshifter that can change forms from a hideous shape of a man into a beautiful white horse, known for luring children and maidens to alike, to lure them into little lake by the moors or a deep forest. His goal is to drown them and even eat them. So
nice guy.
Yeah. The Foscall, or waterfall bard. This one could be seen as a young boy playing on a wooden flute. Yep. Sound familiar? Mm-hmm. And could trick children to his roaring waterfalls and make them drown. The Knockin. This one actually has gotten an English name already, better known as the Nyx. Just like the waterfall bard and the Rise, he lures the children and some maidens to their main territory water and then kills them. The light elves, or Lys Elver, known for living in the forest and being able to help people getting better crops and a better harvest. Sacrificial gifts was a regular occurrence about 1,000 years ago when the Scandinavians were not completely converted to Christianity as of yet. Their looks are variously described, but mostly known for being fair and light-haired. Then you have the Svartalver, which is the black elves. In comparison to the light elves, these kind of elves are disgustingly ugly creatures. They usually keep to themselves, away from the sunlight, and prefer dark, murky mountain caves instead of a bright clearing. Sounds a little bit like the Darrow and the Tarot.
I was going to say, and in Skyrim, I play dark elves all the time.
Yeah. The Dvergr, or dwarves, just most, you know, stories and myths that you know, good handcrafters making different tools and armors described as having the height of a child. The Holdra, which is also the Norwegian version of a siren. Mm. She resides, though, in forests, in being fair and kind to those who show her respect, but those who disrespect her can become dangerous and vengeful.
Yep. That sounds like Blair Witch to me.
Yep. The Nissi can be compared to that of a leprechaun. But in Norwegian, the Nissi does not have a pot of gold at hand, but is mostly seen as a farm guardian whom, when the farmer is ill, the Nissi makes sure the animals of the farm are well and might even feed the animals. The Nissi's main job is to watch the humans and the animals' welfare while being on the farm. But the only pay a Nissi demands is once a year on the 24th of December is to get a bowl of porridge and some fruit.
You can find the Nissi also in a loch in Scotland.
Yeah. moving on to Japan.
Dude, so you this have is what the, I've been waiting for.
Yep, you have the Yosei or Yosai. It is the bewitching spirit. According to an old folk belief from the Iwate Prefecture, it was once feared that the Yosai could resurrect the dead. It is also mentioned that the people of Mount Horai are small fairies that have no knowledge of great evil, and so their hearts never grow old. Hmm. Next, you have the Korpokor, our race of small people in folklore of the Ainu people of the northern Japanese islands.
I knew that.
The name is traditionally analyzed as a tripartite compound of kor and koro, meaning the butterbur plant, and under or below. Basically, it means people below the leaves of the fukai in the Ainu language. The Ainu believe that the Korpokor were the people who lived in the Ainu's land before the Ainu themselves lived there. They were short of stature, agile, and skilled at fishing. They lived in pits with roofs made from butterbur leaves. The Kijimuna. The Kijimuni are small wood spirits, according to the Okinawan mythology.
Hey, that's where Mr. Miyagi's from.
That's right. The Kijimuni are said to live in trees, but the most common one is the banyan tree. They're often described as being child-sized, with red hair covering their bodies and large heads.
A Japanese redhead.
Yeah. I wonder
Tom Cruise messed up everything, dude.
another name for the Kimuna is the Bungaya, which means large-headed. They're known to be very mischievous, playing pranks and tricking humans. One of their best-known tricks is to lie upon a person's chest, making them unable to move or breathe. What does that sound like?
Oh, yeah. When Brad and I covered the night hags around the world, we covered this. Oh, yeah. Man.
All right, moving on to China. So, China, we have the Huli Jing, or a fox spirit.
We got an extra minute or two, Josh. We wrap it up in an extra minute or two.
Okay. So, this is the nine-tailed fox.
Oh, probably. Yeah, Pokemon.
Yep. So, this is the, during the Han Dynasty, the development of ideas around interspecies transformation had taken place in Chinese culture. The idea that non-human creatures with advancing age could assume human form is presented in works such as Lunhing by Wang Chong. As these traditions developed, the fox's capacity for transformation was shaped.
Yeah, I would say this is probably the most famous Japanese cryptid.
No, it's Chinese.
Or excuse me, Chinese cryptid. It shows up in so much folklore, so many movies, so many cartoons, so many things. There's a new movie with Brad Pitt coming out where it's in there.
Yep. So next up, you have the Mogwai.
Shut up. That's for real?
Yep. Oh, according to Chinese tradition, Mogwai are certain demons which often inflict harm on humans. They are said to reproduce during mating seasons triggered by the coming of rain. Supposedly, they take care to breed at these times because rain signifies rich and full times ahead.
I'm sorry. I'm just blown away right now that Mogwai is a real thing.
The term,
I thought they made it up for the movie.
The term Mo derives from the Sanskrit Mara, meaning evil beings, or literally death. In Hinduism and Buddhism, Mara determines fate of death and desire that tether people to the unending cycle of reincarnation and suffering. All right, we're jumping over to the U.S. for just a minute. So we've got the Minnehoon and Native Hawaiian fairies. These were also indigenous small people who lived in Hawaii before the Tahitian people came to reside there. They were driven into the forests and really never seen again.
Here's things, okay? You got dragons, fairies, night hags, things like that, vampires. These things existed around the world before these cultures ever even interacted with one another.
Right, exactly.
It's crazy.
You got the Nimurigar, which is a Shoshan tribe believed in a race of tiny people called the Nimurigar. These tiny people lived in the Rocky Mountains and were aggressive to outsiders.
I wonder if they're in Boulder.
Supposedly, there was a small mummy that was discovered in the mountains in 1932. But the mummy's body disappeared in the 1950s and nobody knows where it is.
Wonder if it's that same thing that Greer had in that one early documentary of his.
Perhaps. All right, last one for the night. We've got Africa. So the Aziza are a type of beneficent supernatural race in West Africa. Living in the forest, they provide good magic for hunters. They are also known to have given practical and spiritual knowledge to people, including the knowledge of how to use fire. The Aziza are described as little fairy people and are also said to live in the ant hills and silk cotton trees. And last but not least, we have the Yumboas. Yumboas are the spirits of the dead. And like many supernatural beings in African beliefs, they are completely of a pearly white color. They are sometimes said to have silver hair. They stand about 2 feet tall. The Yumboas live beneath the Pabst Hills and come out to dance in the moonlight. They feast on large tables, waited on by servants who are invisible except for their hands and feet.
Creepy.
Yumboas eat corn, which they steal from the humans, and fish, which they catch on their own.
What if Thing from Adam's Family is a Yumboa?
Is backwards. Maybe he's backwards. Maybe you're not supposed to be able to see his, you know. So you're saying he's invisible and he just wears hair over top?
No. That's Cousin It. I'm talking about Thing. Okay. The hand.
Oh, yeah, Thing. Oh, the hand. Yeah.
If all you're seeing is the hand, maybe he's a young boy.
Maybe. So it does here say here that they invite both natives and foreigners to the feasts. So
interesting.
Also, they're very kind of underground civilization type situation here. You know, they come out at night, you know, dance in the moonlight, have a big feast.
So. Freaks come out at night, dancing in the moonlight. We got it all. All the Fae do that, Josh. But thank you for what is a truncated course on Fae around the world, man. We will have to revisit this again and really dig deep and hear some more from other countries. We didn't even get them in South America or even
South America Egypt we didn't get into. And there's a lot of other Native American ones that I really didn't, you know, I looked down and I was like, oh, I've got 13 pages, you know. What?
But thank you guys so much, man, for tuning in. We love having you guys just paying attention. If you've got any cool Fae from around the world that you want us to know about, please comment or send us an email or anything like that. You can always email us any leads or any information at contact@theconvergenceenigma.com. Once again, big shout out to the X here, UNX, UNX Network. Go to unxnetwork.com and make sure to check us out at theconvergenceenigma.com. My name is Stefan, and just a reminder, keep your eyes on the skies.
And this has been Josh. The truth is now.
And remember, folks, never stop questioning. Never stop seeking. Good night, everybody.
Good night.